shows back, I did a Theater of the Mind segment on the symbolism of animals and how people throughout history have tended to identify themselves or others with them. In societies and organizations big on ceremony and ritual, animal references abound. Militaries have especially delighted in using animals in the names of their brigades and equipment, with naval forces riding in sharks, bears, and hydras, pilots flying hornets, raptors, and warthogs, and land forces tearing up the countryside with scorpions, elephants, tigers, and panthers. But of all the animals revered for their strength, cunning, and predatory savagery, no beast worldwide can match the status of the wolf. Military units and war machines of land, sea, and sky all include the likeness of this apex predator, and it's easy to see why. Wolves are intelligent, socially advanced, stealthy, and deadly. Indeed, while Canis lupus is highly respected and even deified in some cultures, it is feared, and when human beings are subject to comparison with the wolf, it's likely not for their loyal monogamy or advanced communication skills, but for their predatory nature and mercilessness. Throughout history, man is clearly the most prolific and dangerous predator of man, but a man blended with the legendary quintessence of the wolf is truly a creature to be feared. So it stands to reason that ancient and modern mythology alike would create that most savage of beasts, the lycanthrope, or, as he is commonly known, the werewolf. The lycanthrope, named from the Greek lykos for wolf and anthropos for man, is a specific example of the zoanthrope or therianthrope, a human who is able to transform into the physical form of an animal. The therianthrope exists in some form or another in the religion and folklore of most regions of the world. Kynanthropes, or weredogs, for example, can be found in ancient Greece, China, and Central and Southeast Asia. The Ailuranthrope, or werecat, is common in the lore of Europe, where people were said to take the form of house cats, or sometimes panthers. Asia is the land of the were-tigers, and Africa, home of the were-lions, leopards, and cheetahs. Clearly, if you're going to be attacked by a werecat, you're a lot better off in Europe, where you at least have a chance of getting off with a few scratches and not completely eaten. Were-bears, were-rats, were-hyenas, even were-sharks can be found in different cultures of the world. And some legends, notably those of North and Mesoamerican shamanism, include the skinwalkers, or nahual, humans with the supernatural ability to shift into any form of animal. The werewolf legend, shared by we Westerners, is primarily a hybrid of Western and Eastern European folklore. There were several mentions of lycanthropes in Greek and Roman literature, but in post-Empire Europe they only got a few mentions and weren't really part of the popular mythology until the 14th century. The werewolves of Western Europe were usually tightly associated with witchcraft, and lycanthropy was achieved either voluntarily through some arcane ritual or as a result of a malevolent witch's curse. Meanwhile, in the Slavic regions of Europe, werewolves were often associated with vampires or possession by revenants, tying them in with the camp of the undead. In both regions, the influence of the church can be seen in werewolf legend, with lycanthropy being used as a punishment, either from God or the devil, depending on where you're from. To the modern Halloween haunter, werewolves are usually part of the cast, but not the central focus of the haunt. Most commonly, you see one or two as a rogue element in a graveyard or as one of several classic monsters in a general gothic-style setting. A gypsy caravan is common set dressing, since the association with Universal Pictures' The Wolfman is so strong, it provides an instant context. But what about the haunter who wants to use werewolves as the main theme? If you're establishing a werewolf backstory, and it's not Lawrence Talbot and the Gypsies, some very pertinent information would probably need to be laid out for the audience to, quote, get it. First of all, is this a single werewolf or a family? Wolves are social animals, and while they often hunt solo or in tandem, they usually run in fairly substantial packs. A family or group of lycanthropes would logically be very close-knit. Social order would tend to be pretty rigid, spouses would be inseparable, and the young would be protected ferociously. A single werewolf character would probably need some explanation if there are other characters not of the blood, so to speak. How did this person become one? Is his true nature known by the others, or is it a secret he's trying to hide? And, if his identity is known, how do the others deal with that? It all needs to make some sort of sense. The origin and nature of the lycanthropy would have a major effect on the storyline as well. Did he intentionally seek out a practitioner of the dark arts to aid him in a quest for vengeance? Did she fall under the grip of a cursed relic or evil spell? Did he survive a biting attack? Are they natural-born, descendants of a long line of lycanthropes? All of these would have a significant effect on how the characters live their lives. The victim angle would probably portray someone living a broken life, horrified or confused by their actions, hunted, unable to understand or accept what is happening to them. The vengeance seeker, on the other hand, since he is fully aware of his condition and what it entails, would probably have many precautions in place for his own protection and security, and possibly even loyal helpers to keep him from being hunted down or discovered while maintaining the ability to go on the glorious hunt. Of course, this would also all depend on whether the transformation itself is voluntary or involuntary. If it's something that just happens to the character due to moon phase or nightfall or whatever, that lack of control adds an element of vulnerability, since such werewolves are usually considered to be in the grip of their animal identity and thus beyond rational self-control. If it's something they just do at will, it's likely that they also change back at will, and probably maintain some presence of self-awareness while in their animal form. They wouldn't need to take so many precautions in their daily lives. Also, note that in many legends, the person would effect the transformation by putting on a cloak or belt of wolf hide, or rubbing down with an ointment or potion in some sort of ritual. If the character is a werewolf by use of magic, there could be a scene in the haunt that shows the means or method of change, if it's not simply a natural ability. While the lycanthropes in the popular Underworld franchise lived like homeless street gangs in tunnels under the city, there's no reason why werewolf characters would have to live like animals. After all, they're only animals part-time. They could just as easily come from nobility. They very well could be an old-world, well-bred family line, in which case you would most certainly see plenty of heraldic devices and artwork prominently featuring the wolf. I'm sure they would be fiercely proud of their heritage. I certainly would. Werewolves in popular culture also vary greatly in appearance. In elder folklore, the general description was a human that transformed into a very large wolf, oftentimes without a tail but otherwise wolf-like in form. It was Hollywood that popularized the upright creature that looked like a man, albeit one with full body fur and vaguely wolf-like facial features. That version was the popular image of the lycanthrope in America for many years, until Hollywood brought back the old four-legged beast in successful films like Wolfen and American Werewolf in London. The more canine version has ruled the pack in movies since then. When Universal brought back the Wolfman in 2010, they went back to the classic Lon Chaney Jr. look, favoring the man shape with lupine features, so, of course, as a classic movie fan, I thoroughly enjoyed it for that reason. That appearance gained a whole new level of significance in one scene of the film. After the attack on the gypsy caravan, Talbot looks at the mangled bodies of the werewolf's victims and remarks that, while the wounds appear to be made with the teeth and claws of an animal, they look as if they were made with the intent not to feed, but to maximize the pain and terror of the attack, suggesting the sort of sadism and cruelty that would only come from man. I really liked that. The werewolf that more resembles a human is the one that seems to kill out of malice and cruel intent. Even though one more animalistic and wolf-like might be more savage, completely tearing apart its victims and eating them, at least it would show the animal instinct to feed, and not so much the all-too-human desire to inflict suffering for its own sake. Food for thought. All in all, whether it's tearing apart a hapless hiker, shooting it out with vampires in a subway tunnel, or just sipping a piña colada at Trader Vic's, the werewolf in modern culture is here to stay. Considering that instinctive human distrust of the more primal aspects of the natural world, the opportunity to combine the most awful aspects of animal and human nature is irresistible to the dedicated fearmonger. So why not go old school and let the full moon illuminate your take on one of the most iconic denizens of the holiday? After all, people expect to hear wolf howls on Halloween. Be ashamed to not give them a taste of where they're coming from. From the Bestiary, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunted Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.